The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the simplest, most powerful website creator that helps you make headlines with your own stunning online presence. Explore elegant templates, Getty image integration, and more at squarespace.com. And use the code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly. On an Easter weekend that saw QPR and Leicester come back from the dead, saw Rooney nail it on a cross and saw several keepers have it put through their hands. Monstrous goals, mega comebacks and massive matches, all to be talked about today as we look at Arsenal-Liverpool, the Wiertine derby, Marseille-PSG, Dortmund-Bayern, Roma-Napoli and much more too, including your thoughts, listener, in this Football Weekly. Ordinarily, on an Easter Monday with the sun shining outside, there are places that you might rather be than in the pod discussing football. But after a weekend like this, it's almost like I can't wait to sit here and talk about which goal was best with Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
Hello. Barry Glendening.
Hello.
And James Horncastle.
Hello.
Come on then, James. Which goal was best?
I prefer Defoe's.
What are you talking about? Actually, I know what you mean.
Only because Charlie Adam tries that so often. And it's finally come off. Whereas, yeah, I thought Defoe's was a lot more instinctive.
Okay, the contenders then. Charlie Adams, what was it, 68 yards, they saying?
It keeps getting longer.
You had Rooney hooking it down and then whamming it in. Bobby Zamora's chip, that was pretty...
That was my favourite,
I think. That your favourite? Why, Barry?
For me, it was the most aesthetically pleasing. I mean, they're all wonderful goals. Mm. But in terms of sheer improvisation and skill, I thought Zamora's was the best of a very good bunch.
You also had Gomez's overhead kick and Sanchez. I mean, that was pretty blinding as well, shifting from one foot to the other. And I mean, even before anyone had had time to think.
Cambiasso.
You like that one too?
Just because it's Cambiasso.
Well, it was a good goal.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. But saw it in the flesh.
I kind of side with you on this just because Jermaine Defoe's, I mean, that wasn't even, that was his left foot. He's not left-footed. And the trajectory was just all wrong. I mean, where he put it, it just didn't make any sense at all.
And also, as Barry was saying about aesthetics, if Courtois doesn't touch that Charlie Adams strike, it makes it a much better strike. But because he touches it, it just kind of ruins it a little.
Mm. Zamora's was the best, I thought.
Do you think?
Yeah. Because the way he was running, it was the outside of his left foot to chip it from that angle over the keeper. He wasn't that far off his line. And it kind of looked like it wasn't going to go in for a while as well. Mm. And then it dropped in. So, yeah, Zamora.
All right, fair enough. But what a crazy weekend when Charlie Adam does that and it's not even our favourite goal of the weekend. Right.
I think we're probably being a little harsh.
On Charlie Adam?
I mean,
it's still a good goal, but...
It's very much a Father Ted, they all have lovely bottoms kind of thing. You know, they're all very, very good goals.
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone has a favourite child, don't they? So, you know, even though you're not supposed to have one. Zamora's is mine.
All right, Barry. Great. Well, beyond the goals, just some really interesting matches and some absolutely flabbergasting results as well. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with Sunday's big game down one end of the table or Saturday's big game up at the other as Arsenal hosted Liverpool? Arsene Wenger saying something is happening here. Something's happening. Well, I see you've got a headline on your paper there, James, saying Arsenal on the brink of a new dawn. Is that this year's paper or is that one from...
Well, I suppose it is indicative of that. I mean, if you think last season they started really well and finished poorly. This year, they started poorly and they're finishing well. If they can just have a good year, then everything is there perhaps for them to make that title challenge. I mean, yeah, they were excellent throughout against Liverpool. I thought they started the game really well. They didn't give Liverpool any time to settle, any time on the ball whatsoever. And they had it done and dusted very quickly. And some of their combination play, some of their football was Arsenal at their very best. You know, played at great pace. There was zip in the pass. And that Sanchez goal, you know, they just pounced on a mistake. And it was 1, 2, 3 passes. And Sanchez had that sort of world-class ability to put a devastating finish past Mignolet, who... Even though he conceded so many goals, that had a very good afternoon, I thought.
Did you think so?
Well, I thought he'd particularly the first 10 minutes, I thought he'd particularly kept the minute for quite a while.
Hmm.
I would disagree with James on two fronts there. I thought the first half of the game was sort of just typical Arsenal, and Arsenal in sort of microcosm, in that they started, came at Liverpool like the hounds of hell, and then weirdly let them back into the game for 15 minutes when, you know, they probably should have gone ahead. Then they let Liverpool back into the game. Lazar Markovic had that remarkable mess up where he was in a one-on-one with Ospina, should have had a pop himself, but elected to pass to Sterling and made a mess of the pass. And then Arsenal sort of got back into the game. So, you know, they were even inconsistent in that first half, which they ended up leading 3-0 at the break with three remarkable goals.
Absolutely, and some remarkably shambolic defending, especially on the first one, though. So much of Liverpool's game last year and this year seemed to be about belief, those tremendous runs that they went on in these two seasons. Has their bubble been really burst by Man United?
Well, I thought there were a few signs in the Blackburn Cup game that a team had slightly worked out how to play the 3-4-3 formation, and they didn't play very well in that match at home. And obviously, they've got the replay coming up on Wednesday, which now looks much more difficult than it maybe did a few weeks ago. But again, Van Gaal certainly clocked how to play Liverpool in that match. And I think what slightly hurt them as well is that they were lacking Gerrard and Skrtel, who were two big leaders in the side, not necessarily the best players, but certainly two leaders who you would maybe want to have in a game away at Arsenal. And I think what you've seen in the last two games is a bit of indiscipline creeping into the team, with stupid red cards and Emre Can picking one up as well at the end of the game for a really pointless tackle when the game was basically lost at that point. No need to do that. And they now lose another big player for a big game, which is kind of now going to define their season. Gerrard, there was no real thought for the team in what he did in that moment. And the same for Skrtel as well. The game was lost at that point, and he went and stamped on De Gea, costing them their main central defender for three matches. So I think that's a little problem for Liverpool in those little moments of indiscipline, which maybe suggest a team that's slightly lost its head a little bit in the last few weeks.
Right, the Steven Gerrard goodbye Wembley final. It's really at risk.
It's on the brink, yeah.
It's on the brink.
Yeah, because Blackburn played very well in that game, and certainly Rudy Gestep was a real handful for the Liverpool defence, and they'll be without Skrtel and Cham for that game at Ewood Park. So it's maybe they're going to have to bring back Dejan Lovren, who was a £20 million defender on the bench on Saturday, overlooked in favour of Kolo Touré, who certainly didn't have a very good game. So, yeah, so suddenly from about a month ago, where Liverpool were on a real high after beating Manchester City at Anfield in a game where they played extremely well, suddenly the questions have come back around Rodgers.
Earlier I said I disagreed with James on two things. The other thing, which I didn't, I forgot to mention, was with Mignolet, he did make some very good saves, but I thought he was at fault for two of the goals. Thought he should have done better with Mesut Ozil's excellent free kick. You know, it went into the side of the goal. He was supposed to be minding it. Wasn't in the top corner, so, you know, he could conceivably have reached it. And I also thought he should have done better for the Alexis Sanchez goal, which was pretty much hit really hard, admittedly, but straight at him. And during the game, when I was doing the minute-by-minute report, someone sent me YouTube of a piece of punditry Gary Neville did earlier this season on Sky, in which he was castigating Mignolet. It was when he was having that poor run of form, and pointing out that he crouches too low and that his positioning isn't particularly good. And I thought, for all the impressive way in which he's sort of turned his season around, that was pretty obvious against Arsenal again. And another thing is that before the game, Brendan Rodgers said that he hadn't been upset by the result against Manchester United so much as the poor performance. And I thought the performance against Arsenal was a lot worse.
Right. Okay, well, Mike Mordew saying, Raheem Sterling, everyone. Do you think he's unhappy at Liverpool because he doesn't get the speaking role in that Nivea commercial? Something that crossed my mind. I mean, he's there very much in the background, isn't he, with Henderson grabbing all the limelight and the funny looks. They are 7 points now of the top four. Arsenal moving into second place because City haven't played yet. They're at Crystal Palace Monday night. Arsenal with their seventh straight win.
Yeah.
Must be frustrating for the fans thinking, if only we'd started this run a little bit earlier.
Well, that's what you kind of wonder about Arsenal, is which is the real Arsenal, the form we saw in the first half of the season or the one that we've seen in the second half of the season and or during even this part of this very impressive run since January. Is the real Arsenal the one that we saw in the first leg of the Monaco game? There have been so many what-if moments for this team. But I think at the same time, there are certainly encouraging signs for them.
Well, top four then are the top four. Spurs held to that 0-0 draw up at Turf Moor. It's over for them. City played tonight.
What a game that was.
the highlight.
Who sat through it?
I did.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Worst game you've seen all season? Or ever? Because I didn't see it, but people were talking about it in almost really epically bad terms.
Well, there was
I'm struggling. I've probably seen worse international games.
What was so bad about it?
It was just turgid. It was awful.
Yeah.
Soporific. It was just one of... I was in the office, I had it on, and just it was there on my screen, but I was never watching it. You couldn't bring yourself to watch it for more than sort of 2 minutes at a time.
Right.
Something's happening. I had the Sky Sports News on this morning, and they sort of showed one of the highlights from that game, and this is Spurs' best chance, and it was Paulinho running through, but you know, about 20 yards out, and tries a shot, and it goes about 20 yards wide, and that was Spurs' best.
Wow!
It's worth reading actually. Michael Cox was given the onerous task of providing tactical insight and analysis in today's Guardian of that game, and. If you read his column, they're clearly the musings of a man who A, had very quickly lost the will to live, and B, was given sort of X number of 100 words to write and could not think of a single thing to say because there were no obvious tactics on show.
Wow. All right. Well, anyway, that's Spurs. That was 0-0. City tonight at Crystal Palace. They, of course, have the derby with Man United next Sunday. United, who are fresh from their fifth straight victory, not counting their FA Cup defeat, of course, in the league, effectively five straight in the league. They're looking fantastic. 3-1 over Aston Villa. Herrera got a brace. Matt posts in saying, Ander Herrera has had five shots on target in the league this season. He's scored with every one. Worth a mention.
Would you say he's their best signing in the summer?
He's looking good. The way he took the second goal was the mark of a high-class player. Really cool.
How did he take it? Remind me.
Just the keeper. It was one of those where the keeper didn't move. He just stood still because he knew he was beaten. The ball went in the bottom corner. You see a lot of players maybe tried to put their laces through it and blast it. He just was very calm and stroked it in from the edge of the area. And yeah, it was a nice goal. Scored two that day. Probably not quite as good as Rooney's though. And now he's up front. He's starting to play very well.
Mm.
Wayne Rooney.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, well, I think they've really begun to get continuity of performances, haven't they, as well as results, because there was that period during the winter where they went on that winning streak, but it was like they were winning very ugly. And now they're actually a team that I think many United fans are believing, you know, honour that United tradition, or they're a team that they enjoy watching and are really positive about not only ending the season, but going into the next one.
Right, well, they've got that rough run of fixtures coming up. City next, then Chelsea, and of course Arsenal. Are still awaiting. So that's all very exciting. Everton beat Saints. A rare win for Martinez's side against a team from the top half of the table.
Graziano Pella hit the post the woodwork for the 10th time this season.
My word.
Poor guy.
Poor chap. While Chelsea, if you're looking for them to drop points, maybe from Arsenal's point of view, this is a game that looked like they could have drawn before Begovic rolled that ball right out into their path.
Who had a good game otherwise.
Mm. Yeah.
Begovic.
Yeah, he did. I wouldn't necessarily shoulder him with all the blame for that boo-boo. I think it was sort of mixed cross lines and who was it he was passing the ball to or rolling the ball to? I think it was the French guy, Steven Nzonzi. I would give them sort of 50% of the blame each or maybe 60-40 to Begovic. But I really enjoyed that game and it was... Chelsea never looked totally comfortable, you know. I think they would have been relieved to hear the final whistle. But, yeah, Charlie Adams' goal, obviously, was the highlight of the game. But it was a decent game. And Chelsea's ability to close out games like that and win those kind of games without necessarily playing brilliantly, sort of, they'll win the league, you know.
Do you think, Barry? Is that another feeling you've
No,
got?
But I think if it was anyone else at the top of the table, yeah. Arsenal might fancy the chances of catching them, but it's not going to happen with Chelsea.
Right. I read a stat say that Mourinho's never lost a league from a winning position.
Right.
He's been top at Christmas or top after Christmas.
Last season, the difference was that he had games in hand, which he didn't win.
They messed up against Palace and Villa and Sunderland and Norwich,
right.
which isn't happening this season. In those games.
A little bit of comment on the Charlie Adam goal. Kevin Griffin says, Charlie Adam kicking the ball really hard so he wouldn't have to run after it. Chris Durden says, how come nobody ever mentions Figueroa's halfway line goal anymore? I think it was even further away, wasn't it, Figueroa? Oh, no, it wasn't quite as far as well.
But people do mention it.
They do, okay. Yeah. John Fisher says, Charlie hasn't made anyone look this stupid since Daniela Westbrook, but I don't get that. It was a good goal. It was a good goal, but any self-respecting hipster will know that it's not the best long-range strike this season. Here, for example, is Archie Rintoot to remind us that, basically, Adam was just doing an impression of Moritz Stoppelkamp of Paderborn. Did you see this one,
Jacob?
You know the one, don't you? It was against Hanover a long time ago, but in, you know, this season in the Bundesliga. It was from about 80, and I'm not kidding here, it was from about 80 yards. According to Archie, it was 22 yards further out than Charlie Adams.
Well, hasn't Asmir Begovic scored one from longer
Yeah,
range?
I think goalkeepers are not allowed in this particular...
Typical long ball Stoke.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, if the top four are the top four, are the bottom three the bottom three? No, they're not, listeners, as we'll be explaining after this.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
What a mess down at the bottom, eh? You've got five teams in the relegation battle within 4 points of each other. Or, if you want to include Leicester, and maybe you have to, you've got six teams within 7 points of each other with seven games to go, although Leicester have a game in hand and have the easier run-in. Because five of their last eight games are at home and the other three games are against their direct relegation rivals, including the final game of the season, which is against QPR, which could be absolutely huge. Sunderland... one, but are only 3 points clear. But what a win, Barry. You must be so excited about that.
Yeah, it was a good win, but it wasn't a very good match. Jermaine Defoe's goal was the clear standout moment, and apart from that, was very low in quality. But Newcastle made it very easy for Sunderland. They were a disgrace, largely. Jonas Gutierrez played well, and it was nice to see him back playing well after his illness. Moussa Sissoko alongside him in midfield was an absolute travesty. It's just so bad. And, I mean, there are extenuating circumstances for Newcastle in that their defence... Mike Williamson is the only fit centre-half of the club, and some would argue that he's not even a centre-half anyway, because... I think if there was a contender for worst defender in the Premier League, he would make the shortlist. And then they'd Jan Matt, who didn't look fit. He was limping in the warm-up. He was a right-back playing in central defence. Jack Colback was a midfielder playing a left-back, and Ryan Taylor is a midfielder playing a right-back. So they did reasonably well to keep Sunderland out so long, but they were second to every ball. Their hearts didn't look in it, apart from one or two exceptions, and Sunderland were worthy winners.
With all of that, it did take an absolutely world-class strike from Jermaine Defoe to resolve the game.
And for Newcastle, Perez, I think he missed a pretty good chance that would have given them a draw they didn't deserve.
Yeah, well, should Newcastle also have had a penalty very early on? I did see a replay Sunday night that suggested
they didn't. Think so.
No?
But no, it wasn't. I don't think that was
possible. All right.
I think Sunderland deserved it, although it was a world-class goal, they deserved it for being the more purposeful side. From the first minutes or so, they were really haring at Newcastle down the wings and winning corners and pressing them back. So you could always see if there was one team that was going to benefit from something like that, it was going to be them.
Right.
Sorry for John Carver.
Right.
When he got the job, he seemed to be... Yeah, this is great. This is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And, he's been proved to be well out of his depth. And for him to come out after that game and basically say, look, this will define my tenure at Newcastle. You think the owners have kind of just put him out there to hiding to nothing, really. And yeah, if Newcastle's sort of objective is just to stay in the division, not really compete for trophies and that sort of thing, surely the only thing they have to compete to win is that derby. And for them to have lost five in a row is shocking.
As you say, it was all they had to play for. And
Mania. Yeah.
I want to talk about Tim Krul and the disgraceful scenes in the tunnel. Nobody likes to see this kind of thing. A sportsman applauding another sportsman for doing something absolutely world class. That doesn't happen. I was amazed. Rational people like Danny Murphy, for example, on Sunday night saying, no, what he did was wrong.
Jamie Carragher very upset about it. I don't see anything wrong with it, but I really think Newcastle fans have a lot of things to be upset about. That's very low down the list.
Why would you be upset about it? I mean, it wasn't even... It's not like he went up and patted him on the back in the middle of the pitch. He was walking down the tunnel. He saw Jermaine Defoe just done something absolutely gobsmacking. And he turned, he smiled at him and gave him a pat on the back. I mean, that's the sort of thing we should be applauding, not and getting on his case about.
Why would fans be object to it when you have those sort of memories of the Bernabeu sort of clapping Ronaldinho
after
a sensational performance, you know?
Watch a tennis match and they'll applaud each other's shots when they're really good and no one gets really annoyed about that.
Ditto with snooker, darts.
Right.
I don't know. As I say, Newcastle fans have far more important things to worry about than Tim Krul applauding a piece of magnificence by an opposition player.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, among the things John Carver said, did he say something about he's worried that they might get caught up in the relegation battle? They're currently 9 points off the drop, but teams below them are waking up.
Didn't you predict on Thursday that
they might get relegated? But I lose track of how
they've
many
won two games in 2015, Newcastle, and that they look clueless.
How many?
Two. And they look clueless at the moment. It's in this calendar year. They look clueless.
Yeah, it's difficult to see where they're going to get another point, to be honest. And
really? How many are there?
Well, just the manner in which they're playing. Phil Neville got in trouble with John Carver recently for saying they were playing in flip-flops, meaning they're already on the beach, as they say. So it's difficult to see where they're going to get another point under a manager that, as James says, is clearly out of his depth.
All right, so who's going to overtake them then? Are Leicester, for example, going to get their way out of trouble after a game I imagine you saw, Jacob?
I was there.
You were there.
Yeah,
a 2-1 win over West Ham.
Yeah.
They've now scored Leicester. They've suddenly woken up. They scored 5 goals in their last 2 games, which is more than they'd had in their previous 8 matches put together. Wow. It's their first win in 9.
Yeah. Well, they've always been pretty good going forward, but without taking their chances in so many games and then ending up getting stung because their defence isn't very good and they end up losing by a goal here or there, which could have easily happened on Saturday. They started very well. They scored a great goal through Cambiasso and then they got a penalty 2 minutes later and Adrian saved his second penalty in a row for West Ham. And then they're kind of... You could see the belief sap out of Leicester as West Ham completely took control of the game and missed a load of chances, then equalised. And again, in the second half, Leicester came back pretty strong and they missed a few chances, which virtually all of them went off target. And West Ham ended up almost nicking it. They hit the post and you're just thinking, if West Ham had scored to go 2-1 up, then Leicester... It would have been the same old story for them. Instead, this time, what hadn't been happening for them was they got the goal that they could argue they deserved and held on for it, which hasn't been happening for them so many times this season. They're bottom, but they're by no means the worst team that you'll have seen in the Premier League in the last few years.
Right. Interesting. Do you think this is the start of something then, or just destiny teasing them?
Well, they're 6 points off.
Yeah. With the game in hand. Seven with the game in hand.
Yeah, but it's Chelsea, so
right.
It's possibly not a game in hand.
Okay.
But I mean, their goal difference isn't too bad compared to the rest, so they've got that as well. And they can take teams on. They've got a fairly good run at the end of the season. I wouldn't put it past them. This could be something that kickstarts it for them.
Right.
And you've seen before in recent years, Wigan were dead and buried. Sunderland were meant to be dead and buried last year, and they came back.
Jacob, are they going to do it?
It's a it's tough, but they, I don't think they're terrible, so they could.
What about QPR? Now, this really is a result which underlines the futility of sitting and talking about football, because it just flies in the face of every logic. No, QPR absolutely appalling on the road. West Brom extremely strong at home. Tony Pulis and one of those little arrow things is better than Chris Ramsey. I was saying it's a bit like, you know, when you have one of those magnificent skyscrapers and a giant wave of nature in the form of a tidal wave just sweeps it away, and you just realise, wow, it's all futile in the face of the forces of chaos that actually, you know, govern this world. You have a result like that, 4-1 at West Brom. What happened, Barry?
Why are you turning to me?
I'm searching for some the kind only of rationality.
I was sort of thinking about this over the weekend in an idle moment, and the only thing I could possibly think of was it to do with the return of Joey Barton, who's been absent for 3 games.
Well, he played in the previous game.
Did he?
Yeah, he did, but still. He scored.
He did score. He played well. And, you know, if I was a QPR fan, I'd be very annoyed with him for having been suspended for 3 games, because like him or loathe him, I think he's a decent player. And for a team like that, he's a huge influence. So, but then, you know, he was playing for them when they got themselves into the mess they're in, and there's only so much one man can do. But, it did defy all logic, and I'm struggling to explain it.
Well, it leaves them, 3 points from safety. Yeah, it's also the teams at on the other side of that thin line, like, for example, Aston Villa, who are by no means out of trouble, and Hull.
Well, they play each other tomorrow, Aston Villa QPR.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah, that is big.
Is that because Villa have got the FA Cup game?
Yeah, Tim Sher v Chris Ramsey.
Right.
Villa obviously coming off the back of 2 defeats and suddenly having been on a bit of a high under Sherwood, where they beat Sunderland 4-0, 4-0 up at half time. They're only 2 points above the bottom three, Aston Villa, but if they win this game, then they go up to 15th. And yeah, so it's a huge game for them.
So it's QPR Aston Villa or Aston Villa QPR?
It's Aston Villa QPR. QPR won 2-0 in November.
Right.
Charlie Austin. Yeah.
What about Hull?
Well, so yeah, if QPR win this, then they'll be level on points with Hull and Villa.
Right. And Hull, of course, not only beaten this weekend 3-1 by Swansea, that great goal by Gomez amongst the others, but also have, as I think we may have mentioned in the past, an astonishingly difficult run-in. By far the hardest run-in of any of the relegation teams. Is that right, James?
Yeah, it is indeed.
Liverpool, Man United, Arsenal feature there, plus trips to Saints and Spurs.
Yeah, Steve Bruce felt they were unlucky because they started the second half actually quite well, though not through anything out of open play. It was all corners and set pieces where they looked like they might actually get back into it. And then they went down to 10 men. Bruce thought it was like a 50-50 challenge. It could have gone either way, and it went against them. And these things cost you at the end of the day. But yeah, Gomez, to be honest, I mean, I suppose many people feared for Swansea once Boney left, and he's got 3 in his last 2 games, scored the winner against United, took both of his goals superbly against Hull, and I think, is it one more win and Swansea will probably match their best ever season in the Premier League, their points record. So for them to be 8th, and I think, you know, Gary Monk has done an extremely good job in his first full season.
Not looking good for Hull heading for the Championship, as indeed are we in a moment or two, as we have a quick shout-out for the second tier of English football. We've got some big fixtures ahead of them.
I forgot earlier to mention my astonishing Sunderland stat.
Oh, crikey. Over to you, Barry.
Yes. Right, they notched up their northeastern Manita.
Yep.
But in their last 3 games in which they've beaten Newcastle, in the following game, they've lost them all against Hull.
Really? Do they play Hull on this occasion?
No, thank God. I checked. It's Crystal Palace next.
That's interesting.
Oh, yeah, 3 consecutive defeats against Hull after wins against Newcastle.
Wow. I wonder if there's anything in the next part, anything like as exciting as that. We'll see after this.
Guardian listeners get the latest news, but they can also create it. With our sponsor Squarespace, you can easily create an elegant website for your personal brand, online store, business, personal portfolio, or blog. Whoever you are, Squarespace's simple tools and elegant designs make your ideas newsworthy and accessible to any audience. Try it at squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Now, championship today. What a crazy, again, end of season they're having down in the second tier. It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, at the moment, and this is ahead of the Monday fixtures, the top four are separated by only 2 points. Wow. Could it be tighter? Yes. Could be the four teams below them from fifth to eighth separated by only 1 point. Today, Borough, who are top for the moment, are at fourth place. Watford, that's going to be huge. Wolves, who are in eighth place, but really in with a shout of making those playoff positions, they'll be hosting Leeds. A lot of people posting in saying, let's talk about Leeds. Cormac Foley, a piece on the ongoing madness at Leeds would be nice. Adam Brown, the shambles at Leeds would be good as the assistant manager sacked. Antonucci's contract, Red Bull rumours. And Jazz Horse, I see Leeds have decided to shoot themselves in the foot again by suspending Steve Thompson. Neil Redfern now appears to be considering his Leeds future. Will this nonsense ever end? Leeds fan James Horncastle, tell us more.
I don't think it will ever end, is it?
Will it never end?
Unfortunately, the club has become quite toxic.
Ooh.
Neil Redfern has done an absolutely outstanding job. Yeah, since the turn of the year, if the championship started then, Leeds would be sixth. They'd be in the playoffs. They had some stability ever since Chelina had been disqualified, and that stability has gone after the events in the week where Redfern's assistant is suspended.
Yeah, why was that? Do you know?
It's still
Does he wear the colour purple or something like that, which is considered unlucky in Italy? It'd be that kind of reason, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I suspect, although Chelino is supposed to have no influence whatsoever.
Well, of course, he's disqualified. How could he?
and Redfern was told not to to play his striker, Mirko Antonucci,
right,
because in his contract, if he scores, I think, two more goals, he's eligible for a new contract. It would automatically renew, and he's in his 30s, and obviously they don't want to do that. But Redfern actually played Antonucci in the defeat. He brought him on, which is exactly what the supporters were calling for. It didn't help. They still lost 3-0. But it's just a real shame for Leeds to be finishing what already seemed to be a moribund season after sacking Hockaday, going through three managers, and then. And then for this to be kind of robbed of them again.
And only a few days ago, Neil Redfern gave an interview to The Guardian in which he seemed to be very, very content with the life. He was saying the club had loads of good young players in their academy and the future was bright after, several years of turmoil.
How swiftly things move, and of course particularly there in the Championship. We should also mention Brentford. What was their score?
They won 4-1 at Craven Cottage on Friday. They're playing at home today.
Andre Gray says some worldies this weekend, including three from Brentford in the Championship. Three of those four were really special, were they, Jacob?
Yeah, very good, yeah.
All right.
Two very good ones from Stuart Dallas.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it was another good day on Friday. I'm sure it'll be good today. Had Ipswich drawing with Bournemouth, where Freddie Sears put Ipswich ahead, really. That's a great signing by Mick McCarthy, who has probably got one of the tighter budgets in the Championship. And I remember watching
£10,000, I believe, entire team.
Sure that probably you have to pay some wages at the same time for all these players. But Freddie Sears was somebody who came through at West Ham. He scored with his second touch on his debut and then didn't really do anything else after that. Dropped down playing in League One for Colchester and has been picked up by McCarthy and has scored quite a few goals for them since.
A far-sighted move to bring in Sears by McCarthy.
Very, very good. Mm-hmm. McCarthy seems to have the knack in that division of getting players who you wouldn't really expect to be much use at that level, and then he starts to...
Got it.
It's taken Barry about 5 minutes to work out.
Far-sighted Sears.
Producer Pete, who's in for producer, I can't remember his name. What's that fellow?
Ben.
Ben, that's right, yeah. Well, anyway, producer Pete was pointing out that it was Freddie Sears who scored the ghost goal for Palace.
Yep.
Against Bristol City.
Yep.
That's what producer Pete says.
Yep, it was. Yeah. And then, yeah, so then and then Kenwyn Jones scored for equaliser for Bournemouth late on in that game. And then later on you had Derby, who are spectacular bottle jobs, it appears, at the moment. they should have won the playoffs last season. Many people thought they should be the best team in the division this season and win the league. And now they're in a real fight just to get into the playoffs.
Wow.
Steve McLaren says they have no real right to be there the way they're playing. What has hurt them is that they had an injury to Chris Martin, who makes their attack function a lot better, and I think he's back now. But they were 2-1 up at home against 10-man Watford, and Jukanovic, who is a pretty good tactician for Watford's manager, a former Chelsea player, kept two up front and they got a late equaliser. So once Watford get out of this little tricky run they've had of playing Derby and then Borough today, they don't have a very good record against the top sides. They've actually got a pretty good run in.
Jacob, it was all really interesting. It was probably completely out of date, of course, by the time people hear this. Well, anyway, there you go. Listen, that was a little snapshot from before the last round.
Looks like Bournemouth are going to go up, though.
Yeah.
And win the league at the moment.
I'm absolutely reeling at the news. Kenwyn Jones is a Bournemouth.
They got him from Cardiff. Yeah.
Well,
gives them a plan B.
Always good to have one of them.
Yeah.
Wherever it comes from. Now, we're going to talk about that more on Thursday, I'd imagine. Hillbilly Zombie says, not to be pedantic, but I believe the full moniker was the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. We're talking about, yeah? James, you know what we're talking about. You're Steve Bruce Shame.
Yeah, Ghostbusters. Yeah. Apparently, Brucey is going to go on a diet now.
Oh, really? Why?
And he was, well, he wanted to tell journalists, A, because they'd been mean enough to report on his Barbados holidays, but then to say that he'd be horrible to them for the next however long he's going to be on this diet, because he'll be deprived of all of his favourite foodstuffs.
Right.
So.
Okay. A very exotic post here from ID 739669, who, this confuses me, April 14 is the draw for the second round of the AFC qualifiers for the World Cup. It must be the Asian. Must be the Asian conference, because then he talks about Myanmar, or Burma as they used to be known. And he asks, I don't understand why they're not the best football team in the world, given their national sport. Now, I don't know how this is pronounced, but he posts an interesting link to it. A Chinloni or Chinlon? It's extraordinary. It basically consists of six players in a ring. And they just basically pass the ball back and forth, only with shoulders and back heels, as far as I could tell. And it's very much non-competitive. It's a bit of a dance. It's a bit sort of capoeira-esque in the sense that it's kind of a dance stroke sport thing. But it amazing in terms of the keepy uppy skills involved. Absolutely amazing.
Do you remember that Brazilian young player, Curlon?
Curlon, the swan, the focker. Yeah. Not swan, the seal. The focker. I bet they did call him the focker. Because he used to get clattered by while he was there, like looking up, doing his keepy uppies on his head. Defenders would just come in and go, no, not on my watch. yes. All right. Okay. Hey, we're speaking about abroad. So let's talk about some of that continental football, because it's a huge weekend across Europe. Dale Roots wants us to talk about the A-League in Australia. Top five teams are within 3 points of each other with 3 weeks to go. That sounds very exciting. To get an update on that as it heads towards its denouement. Meantime, though, we had an absolutely terrific game Sunday night, didn't we, James? Marseille-PSG. First of all, I mean, it was a proper fixture. The Velodrome, now that they've finally done it up and taken the scaffolding away, looks absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it was a sellout. 65,000 attendance, which I think is the biggest ever recorded for a club game that hasn't been held at the Stade de France in Ligue 1. And it was a great occasion match with a great match. It was a classique. Marseille twice took the lead through André-Pierre Gignac, who's a Marseille fan, born and bred. And PSG managed to get back into it and really kind of killed the game just after half time when they equalised and they took the lead through
in the space of 2 minutes, though.
Yeah, and it meant PSG went back to the top of the table because Lyon had won the day before.
Right.
And
Now you've got PSG 1 point ahead of Lyon, and Marseille look like they're probably out. They're 5 points now off the top of the table.
Yeah, and at risk of being caught by Monaco, which would be devastating for them if they were to miss out on the Champions League 2 years running. I think that would mean they'd some of their best young players like Batshuayi They might have to cash in on them. But Lyon really perhaps have a chance because they've got that great strike partnership with Fekir and Lacazette. And also, you were mentioning last night, PSG's fixture list.
Mm. Their fixture list and their injuries. Mm. Because you've got, well, basically, they've got, how many games is it they've got? I mean, April's crazy. They're in competition on four fronts. They've got the League Cup, which the final is this Saturday. They've got a French Cup semi-final, which is midweek against Saint-Étienne. They've got games against Barcelona coming up, and of course this title challenge. They've also probably got a suspension coming up for Ibrahimovic, at least in domestic terms, for his comments about France in general and their referees and that kind of thing. And yesterday they picked up massive injuries. David Luiz going out with what looked like a really serious hamstring. Thiago Motta also, similar problem. So, yikes. It's by no means over, that title race.
Hey, do you know who Bielsa keeps getting linked with?
Who?
West Ham.
All right.
That would be exciting.
What would he do with
Kevin Nolan?
Make him run a lot, I think.
Yeah, it would be amazing. Yeah.
Oh, Kazumura. Do you see that? 48 years of age. Do you remember Kazumura? We do, because he played for Genoa. He's the first Japanese player ever to feature in Italy. Mm. And
He's still going.
48 years of age. He's now in the Japanese second division, the J-League 2, with Yokohama. He scored in a 3-2 win over Jubilo Iwata. So he's the oldest scorer ever in Japan.
Wow.
Wow, indeed. There was the Clásica. Did you see that Saturday afternoon?
I was on the motorway.
All right, wasn't the most amazing of games. Of course, Borussia Dortmund have had one or two issues this year, but they gave Bayern a bit of a game. Lewandowski, their former player, got the only goal of the game. A brilliant save. They very nearly equalised, didn't they, James?
Marco Reus had a great free kick. He bent it over the wall. It was going low, and Neuer made a great save. And I think Reus couldn't see the outcome of his shot because of the wall. He thought he'd scored, so he starts celebrating, and instead Neuer is just sat on the ball. He's got his arm resting on the ball. It's magnificent.
He's killed it dead, didn't he? He's got this kind of mysterious momentum killing arm that he just puts there, and the ball just stopped. Wow. Right, anyway, that was Germany. What else? Hey, Italy. Oh, Spain. Should we do Spain and then?
Did you see what happened in Spain?
Yeah,
see the that was. I think that's my favourite ever record.
The turf throwing at Busquets.
Yeah, yeah. I watched the second half of that game and it wasn't very good.
So this is Barcelona, who've already seen Real Madrid win 9-1 at home
Ronaldo
to Granada.
Scored an 8-minute hat trick.
He got five all in all
for the first time. I think it's Madrid's biggest win since 1967.
He's back, and they're talking about the fact.
Well, he was back against Granada.
Right, he's back in Israel. We're asked today very much, saying he's back, and it's Operación 30 Puntos or whatever.
Basically, once they scored the first goal, they were just rampant.
Well, because they lost the Clásico and all that, and they'd had three defeats in their previous four matches. So it was all about, can we now win all our remaining games and put the pressure on Barca? If Barca slip up a couple of times, we can still do it. Then this game comes along, and they're saying, wow.
But what was particularly significant, I think, was that James was back in midfield.
James Rodriguez.
And he was very good. Really good goal for Ronaldo. Ronaldo's first goal was a great bit of James play, which they've probably been missing for the last, 2 months or so since he's been out. So yeah, once now he's back, suddenly the midfield is Modric, Kroos and James, and you're starting to get a bit frightened when that's the midfield, and Bale and Ronaldo on the wings.
So that was 9-1, that was Sunday morning, and then Sunday evening, Barcelona against
Celta Vigo.
Yeah, it
was a really ugly game. I was turned at half time because I was watching the tennis in Miami, and Murray lost again to Djokovic. And so turned over a bit depressed, and the game wasn't very good. And then Barcelona scored a late, got a really big goal, really significant goal in the kind of game that could easily have ended up 0-0 or Celta Vigo end up nicking it. And then Mathieu, who scored in the Clásico, scores at the far post, a header from a free kick, really un-Barcelona type goal.
It's a really brave header,
clattered
his head off.
And
the
then.
Post.
Sergio Busquets is being Sergio Busquets and wasting time at a free kick. And suddenly, out of nowhere, the Celta Vigo player is being shown a red card. You're not quite sure what's going on. And there's a big ruckus. And suddenly the camera shows that he'd picked up a piece of turf and chucked it from about 10 yards away. So it's a pretty good throw in Busquets, basically his eye.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. It was, in terms of improvisation for a way to get at your opponent, it was superb, remarkably childish, and also just brilliant accuracy.
He is mud in your eye in a very real sense.
Well, someone tweeted at me saying Busquets can be taken down by a blade of grass right now. Next is thin air.
Wow.
I think he's already been taken out by thin air a few times.
Yeah.
Let's finish off with a quick word on Italy. Everyone playing on Saturday to leave Sunday free for, you know, Catholic
Easter
stuff.
Hunts. Yeah. Apart from Roberto Mancini.
Apart from Roberto Mancini, who called them all into training. Why?
He cancelled Easter because they drew 1-1 against Parma.
This is Inter,
at San Siro.
Yep.
And Parma, of course, a club that's gone bankrupt. Their players haven't been paid all season. And yet you couldn't really tell who that happened to, because Inter were woeful. They only scored through a deflected goal. And the goal scorer, Freddy Guarin, said we should all be ashamed of ourselves. We saw this sort of Mancini towards the end of his days at Man City, where he's just swearing at everyone, including Davide Santon, who came back to Inter from Newcastle in January. He was off with a head injury, and whilst he was off, Parma equalised, incidentally from a player who left Greece because he was being unpaid to join Parma, where he's since been unpaid. So he scores, and Mancini turns to Davide Santon and basically says,
Cazzo,
which is you dickhead. If you were on the pitch, we wouldn't have conceded that goal. Mm. He cancelled Easter, had them in for training at 8:30 a.m. And there was this little boy in the stands at Inter who a few years ago went there and held up a little banner which said, please, can you win? I'm sick of having the mick taken out of me at school. And he showed up again with another banner saying, I've got
6 more years of school left, please.
Yeah, so poor Filippo.
Yeah, well, speaking of banners, we really should touch on what happened at the Stadio Olimpico on Saturday. It was a massive game for Roma, who've got Lazio breathing down their necks. Lazio, the form team in Italy, James, 7 straight wins. And Roma, who hadn't had a win at home since November, their margin over the teams below them had shrunk down to this just 1 point. They took on Napoli, who in a massive game for Napoli as well, for their Champions League hopes of a top three finish, and 1-0. So that was great for Roma. That was the good news. The bad news was, we talked about this on Thursday, the fact that before a Coppa Italia final in Rome, a Roma supporter, no longer a frequenter of the curva, but a Roma supporter had basically been arrested for shooting and causing the death of a Napoli fan who was in town for the game. And, well, 2 banners held up by the Curva Sud, which just defy, absolutely astonishing. And I mean, of all the things that you might think an Italian fan might have a go at, a mother of a dead fan, I just can't believe that they would do this. So basically, they held 2 banners up, accusing her of basically profiteering off her son's death. And
all she's done is speak out about violence.
She also wrote a book, but the profits from the book went to the hospital where her son was in a coma after being shot by this Roma fan. Astonishing. The mayor's apologised, the club awards president. I imagine that there's going to be really... I mean, the lawyer of the family is calling for points to be deducted, and whatever they do, it's hard to say that it's too much because they're just horrible. Yeah.
It was an interesting weekend in Turkey as well. Because the Fenerbahce team bus got attacked by someone. They thought someone was throwing stones at the bus, but it was someone firing at them with a shotgun.
You're kidding.
And the driver was injured, not particularly seriously, I think, and he was the only person hurt, but you know, the windows of the coach were shot out. And and this was on the same day that Wesley Sneijder, who plays for Galatasaray, he was forced to apologise on Twitter for upsetting a lot of Leeds supporters, because on the 15th anniversary of those 2 Leeds supporters being shot or stabbed by Galatasaray fan, or attacked by several fans and stabbed and killed, Sneijder was endorsing a set of club-branded kitchen knives on Twitter, and Leeds fans took grave exception to this. So he deleted the offensive tweet and apologised, saying he wasn't aware of the anniversary. But it seems a bit odd that a club would be shilling knives, club branded knives.
Well, the Spanish are always doing that. You can barely pick up a copy of Marca without it offering you Real Madrid cutlery, or especially the Catalans, actually, to be fair. Anyway, my word. Well, let's hope we have some of the nicer things to talk about on Thursday when we return for Football Weekly Extra. Of course, it's going to be a big week, big Monday in the Championship. And, of course, there's that QPR Aston Villa game as well. So that's all very exciting. Many, many thanks to Jacob, to James, and to Barry, and special guest producer Pete. He'll be back with us on Thursday. And you, listener, hope you have had yourself a super Easter Monday and the rest of the week goes splendidly. For now, it's arrivederci.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the simplest, most powerful website creator that helps you make headlines with your own stunning online presence. Explore elegant templates, Getty image integration, and more at squarespace.com, and use the code Guardian to get 10% off.